to us. They don't even communicate to us in the, as a whole. Every corporation is getting the same way. I've seen it. I lived it. And I have a lot of friends from throughout Alaska that are living through the same hardship as that. The direction, there's no direction that we can see. There's no light at the end of the tunnel. And myself, I'd like to see it change some way where, like, if the board of directors are not funneling our land right, are using it right to benefit us, they should be let go, because I feel like if they declare bankruptcy, everybody's going to be, they're protected by law some way, and we're the ones that are going to pay for it. If we don't have it, are we going to owe the government if we say they went bankrupt now? Are we going to owe the government if we go in the hole? There's such a thing, and people aren't looking forward to things like that. And I am. I'm thinking, what can I do getting involved in Heidelberg? How can we help our own people? Because right now we're like this in Heidelberg. There's two families. One family has all the power. They have all the board of directors. Our family sits nil. They're trying to outdo each other. And every time I go home, even at church doings and stuff like that, I say, we got to have unity, one, make one. And that means Tlingit Haida, the Eskimo, wherever, we needed one unity. And they got it now. We have 13 corporations and we're divided. That's where it started. They divided us, and that was, and we need all the people's support. The way I'm feeling now, I'm just thinking, I heard that you just got to speak up and it'll be heard somewhere. If you keep speaking enough, people are going to start wondering that there's something underneath all of this. I went to a government school and I wasn't too happy about it. That was part of being divided. I feel that way. I have nothing. When I was in ninth grade, I had my brother write a letter so that I could try to get back home to our people. It was a sad thing. And this is how I feel about the corporations that they started. It's bad. Nothing good of it come. Today, up to this date, I have yet to benefit from the Haida Corporation. And when I signed up my family, there was an incident. I wanted to be known. I took two kids under my name. I adopted two kids. And I signed them up for the Haida Corporation, and they put us out, they put them at large. I never fought the issue. They just automatically took them and put them at large. And if I adopted those two kids, I gave them my name, and I wanted them in the Haida Corporation. We didn't know what we were getting into at the start, but I wanted them to be under my name. I wanted them to have the shares. They have Sea Alaska shares. I'm proud of it that they got something. But when we planned, my wife and I talked about it. I said, I'll give my shares to my daughter. She's 11 years old now. This is how I feel about things. We shouldn't have to add new things. We already have enough on our hands. We should think of our kids. We're all getting older, and how we're going to run it is we take care of them. We are the doctors of our own children. If we don't prescribe the right medicine, they're not going to make it too far by themselves. So that's all I got to say right now. Thank you,
Mr. Peel. Thank you very much.
My name's Renee Vigil, and I'm staying at 3631 East G, Tacoma, 98404. And I'm a member of the 13th Region, and I wasn't old enough when my parents put me in the 13th region, but I feel that the 13th region should be abolished now and that all the members in the 13th region be allowed to join their native corporation from up north. And that's what all I'd like to say, and I'd like you to look into that.
Okay, thank you, sir. Thank you.
Hello, as you can see, I'm not a native Alaskan. However, I would like to give some testimony that might be of use to you, Judge Berger. Okay. My name is Toby Thaler. I'm an attorney with the Evergreen Legal Services Native American Project. And the relevant experience I have is that in 1976 and 77, I was a legal intern with the Dillingham, Alaska Office of Alaska Legal Services. Our office handled a number of matters of interest to particularly Yupik Eskimo and Aleut clients in the Bristol Bay region. That included limited entry permits under Alaska state law and Alaska native allotments under federal law that were being applied for at that time in the rush as the Native Claim Settlement Act was implemented. I think that my experience gives me some insight into the kind of problems that will be faced by the Native people as the shares become alienable in 1991, and I would like to use those two areas of law that I mentioned as good analogies for what can happen and why it's a serious problem. With regard to the fishing, the history of fishing in Bristol Bay is that before the Russians came, the people subsisted on the fishery and also traded the fish for other goods. When the Russians and then the Americans came, the fishery developed into a commercial industry. But the pattern that developed was that the native people continued to be the primary gatherers of the resource and were sellers to the canneries. When the state of Alaska began to implement the limited entry program, they based acquisition of a limited entry permit on past experience in the industry. So that was good for the native people in the sense that they had the experience in the industry, therefore they were able to obtain the majority of the permits. Unfortunately, the way the program is set up, as in most Western legal structures, the permits are a personal piece of private property, hence alienable. Beyond that even, as an aside, the limited entry permits were difficult to use by other members in the family. They were so attached to the person that held them that it was difficult to have somebody else in the family use them if you were unable to in any particular season. The bureaucratic structure for permitting that was very complicated. I had a few cases where I would try and temporarily transfer permits and it was difficult. But then, once somebody dies, then the permit doesn't, it goes into the estate, and hopefully one of the children would get it. But what started happening when I was there 10 years ago, and what I understand is continuing to happen, is that
rather than because they're capable. We need capable people. We have some already. And they won't use them until we begin to learn to use the people we have to run our businesses and our lives. Technically, we will lose what we have. You know, we started losing our, they talk a lot about the culture and heritage of your people. We started losing that way back when the Russians found Alaska and when the Spanish people and the English people came up and began filtering into our society. There's a book written on it, it's called Lost Heritage. We started losing it little by little. And we're not the only ones. all the major Indian civilizations have lost their heritage. And if we can save a little bit of it, that's all we can do.
Yeah, that's right. But also that I wanted to know why, like, the corporations have so many, like, villages, and then they give them the allotted amount of money, you know, to work with. But they don't do nothing. Like, some of the villages aren't adequate people to put the money into business or whatever. And this way we're going to lose it all if we just let the whole work stay in corporations. If we put it all into one, I think it would work even better, because the other people will help each other. Mm-hmm. Like if we all pray together, we'll stay together. It's just that way. And people aren't going to, if they have somebody to help, that the ones that are, they might be not educated enough to help other people in other places, then they're going to just take over with their allotted money, what they're using to educate somebody else, and then it's just a vicious circle of educating, and not, maybe they don't want, they won't get nowhere.
The surprising thing about it was the attorney that worked with the Quinkett and Haida land claims, his name was Weisbrot. He came from a prestigious law firm in Washington, Weisbrot. He said that when they were selling the Quinkett and Haida land claims, he said it's an impossibility to give money to each individual. There isn't enough. I think it came down to, say, about $18 or something like that, if it was distributed. You know, you can spend $18 in no time. Big example of land claims that was used or really showed what could happen if all the money was given is the land claims that was made for the Klamath Falls Indians. The money was given to them. Everybody got their money. And it was a big joke. I was living here in Seattle. It was in the papers. There was one man sitting on the curb. He was drunk. He had a brown paper sack full of money. All his money.
That's why I'm saying.
And that's what happened to his money.
That's why I'm saying
we
cannot do everything.
They were taken advantage of. Some of them were taken advantage of by other people.
Yeah.
But a few of them went out and bought farm equipment and went and fixed up their land and improved their lives. And this happened over and over and over again through practically every land claims that was settled in the United States. And so this was why they thought they could protect the money we were getting by forming 12 regions in Alaska. And the only way they could do it as fairly as they could was to distribute some to the villages and leave some in the corporations so that they could operate. They couldn't give each individual person in the village their money because there wasn't enough of it. And so that by providing enough money for businesses or like this cooperative I talked about, or improvements like they had housing, the man mm-hmm. was talking about the housing in Heidelberg, that the benefits would come to them. And it's an impossibility to distribute money to people. You know, we're scattered all over the United States, and some of our people are living out of the country. I ran the Quinkett and Haida office for a little while. I was getting letters from every place that you could imagine. And to distribute money to people living as scattered as we are, today, you can see because of the fact that we're scattered all over, there isn't enough of a representation here. And we made every effort we could to distribute information about this hearing. The problem with our people is they don't realize that the issues that are going to be presented here today is a very important factor in what they have in 1991.
That's right. Anyway, I just wanted to tell you, I liked your speech up there and your information you have. But we have to find a way for 1991.
We sure do.
How we're going to support our American, Alaskan people to make them live and give their heritage to the ones below us. And we just got to protect them somehow to make it stay that way.
Well, I hope we do. The main thing is that I hope we have enough left to pass on to the children that are going to follow us, whatever there is left.
Thank you, Margaret.
Thank you both.
Can I question you? I mean, not question you, but I really feel...
Please, sit down, Mrs.
You mentioned something about the government.
Yeah.
And I think the government is taking control of us, and it's time we start getting control of ourselves. I really feel that they are more interested in the land. They don't care what the individuals want or need, as long as they give out what they got. They're satisfied. And it's possibly causing a lot of stress amongst the shareholders, thinking maybe we aren't getting our share. But eventually we'll wind up getting it if we work it right. A lot of that can be restricted, which is okay too, but like I said, they're more interested in land than they are individuals. And they don't care if it's restricted. That's okay too. As far as the Federal Bank Reserve, they'll keep investing, and they'll be on control. And I'm not pointing out at anyone. I'm just speaking for what I feel, what I know of, and what I can sense and feel of what's going on. I really think that, you know, for example, the government can go and slip, you know, take a house right from under a person's feet. And that's the same way with this Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. Like I said earlier, it can be a losing part, a losing of money, and losing of land, and losing of this. I hate to say it this way.
But maybe
I really doubt that it's going to happen that way for shareholders that know what they're doing. I'm really speaking for shareholders.
Go ahead.
Well, actually, let's say we created our own problem. The land was bought from the Russians by the United States. Technically, mm-hmm. It was their land. But prior to that, we owned it. The Aborigines, the natives that lived there, owned it. However, they had no form of government to state their claims or show their claims. And so when we brought the claims, if we were living in another country, it would never have been granted to us or given back to us. All right, so we got it back. And we got paid for it, and we got certain benefits given to us. But we didn't do our part. It wasn't developed, and it is not being run the way the government thought we would handle it. The government, to my way of thinking, has done a lot for the natives. I went to an Indian school in Oregon, and It's the surprising part of it was run by a army captain. He was part Indian. And we marched to our meals. We marched to school. We went to school half a day. We worked half a day. And we learned different trades and different occupations. I wasn't very crazy about it. I didn't particularly like it. However,
if they could get more land and more money in proportion to the number of new natives admitted as shareholders.
Right.
I see. Okay. Well, thank you, sir. Thank you very much.
I am Gilbert Matthews, and my address is 702 Northwest 58, Seattle, Washington, 98107. And I would like to start with the problems we've had in our companies, and I think it hits many of us down here and in Alaska, because so many of us have gone to our companies and made application for jobs and never got them. And yet, the management of our companies have been able to hire their relatives, their immediate families, and their friends over us. And we are the owners of the companies, and still we have a harder time getting in than they do. And I would like to tell you that in December of 1983, there were 710 employees working for Ocean Beauty Seafoods. And out of that 710, we had 10 shareholders working.
What was that date, year?
1983 in December.
For one month. Yeah. Just for the record, and you said that was how many again?
710 employees working for Ocean Beauty Seafood.
Yeah.
And the reason I asked...
And how many were shareholders?
10.
And Ocean Beauty is a subsidiary of what corporation?
Sea Alaska.
Yeah.
And during the year of 1983, the earnings of all the employees of Ocean Beauty was $16,300,000. And out of the $16,300,000, our stockholders earned under $700,000. And another, in 81, 82, the winter of 81 and 82, we had one stockholder that was hired to go to work for Ocean Beauty Seafood. He came down to work 5 minutes to 8 in the morning, 10 after 8 he was on his way home. He was fired before he could start. And it took the shareholder advisory committee about 3 or 4 months of work before they would hire him back. And then we had another one later on that winter, was hired at Seattle Seafood, and he was going to be a forklift driver. He worked one day and was fired because they said he couldn't qualify as a forklift driver. So the next day he came down and he went to work with us at Ocean Beauty, and the first thing they put him on was a forklift. And he worked on that until he left. So it didn't hold true that one part of our company said he wasn't qualified, and yet they took him in the other one and let him go on it. And then we tried to get, a shareholder advisory committee talked to management of Sea Alaska and tried to get him to hire one of our stockholders for a watchman at Ocean Beauty Seafoods, because there were so many, there were herring pumps that were worth about $12,000 that was stolen off the dock. There was power blocks worth about $6,000 stolen. The carpenter told me that he couldn't buy plywood, 2x4s or anything, because if he ordered it on Friday, got it on Friday, by Monday he wouldn't have it because other employees working there would take it during the weekend. And this is the reason we tried to get someone in there. But Ocean Beauty Management said that it didn't warrant, there wasn't enough taken from the company to have someone hired down there. Yet there was diesel oil and gasoline taken off of the tenders all winter as they laid at the docks.
Where is the dock?
Pardon me?
Where is that?
The location?
Yeah.
It's 1100 West Ewing here in Seattle. And you talk about the hiring of our people, you know, I think there's more problems with people other than stockholders that work for some of our companies. Like we had a superintendent that was at the Uganic, and then he wound up in Peterson Point, and our president at that time in Sea Alaska was told by one of the employees that they had a people, this superintendent had a people problem. He didn't know how to handle people, and no one could work with him. And he said, for the good of the company, that man should not be here. And yet it took 2.5 years after that before they let him go. And it took many, many letters that they asked me to have people write about this person because he couldn't handle people. He didn't want our stockholders, and he even fired me.
I do feel we've managed to pretty well stop the losses, get the company turned around, and I think this year we probably will have accomplished that, but it will be a long road back for us because the funds that were lost in times past just aren't going to be recovered that quickly. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Engelstad. Could I ask you a couple of questions?
Sure.
Is the 13th Corporation incorporated under Alaska state law or Washington state law?
Under Alaska state law. It's required under the act that mm-hmm. all of the corporations are formed under Alaska state law. So we're an Alaska formed corporation with a base in Bellevue now. We've moved our offices from Seattle to Bellevue.
And I know Mr. Has the 13th Corporation ever paid a dividend?
No.
What was the amount of capital the 13th Corporation received during the period that there were annual infusions of capital? What was the total amount of capital?
The total sum that was retained by the Corporation for use as capital was somewhere between 24 and 27 million. And it was received over a 4 to 5 year period.
And what is approximately the net worth of the corporation today?
Our 1984 audited financial statement, which is going out this month to our shareholders, would indicate about a $2 million asset value present of the corporation. At the time I first became involved in management of the corporation, it owed more money than it had in assets.
So you've come back from minus.
That's right. Yes, we've come back from minus to plus. And it ain't been easy. I've worn out 4 pairs of shoes tap dancing with creditors.
What about, have you thought about the question of the future, or do you have any idea how your shareholders feel about whether they should be able to sell their shares in after 1991? There's no land at stake here, and you don't see any realistic possibility of Congress providing land for the 13th Corporation. So how do you look at this whole business that we've been hearing about in Alaska for a year now? Well, should we be allowed to sell our shares? Should we have to sell them back to our corporation, or should we just be able to walk down to Pierce, Fenner and Bean, or whatever it is, Merrill Lynch, and say, here, what do I get for these?
Mm-hmm.
Any ideas?
I've got some personal thoughts on it. Our corporation, our board of directors, hasn't taken any official policy on that. We are members of the Alaska Federation of Natives, so to some extent we'd be influenced by that body. Couple of thoughts on that, I guess. Let me give you another one on the land. My notion on the compensation for land, given the fact that the 13th was created out of a bad political crisis, it seems to me that there ought to be some recognition, somehow, that the 13th shareholders indeed are second-class citizens under this act. I beat my brains out trying to think of a way to do that, which would sound reasonable to the 12 corporations inside of Alaska, and which would make some sense in Congress. And I don't know that there is an answer to that, but my thoughts to this point in time have been perhaps there should be a calculation made of the total amount of 7i revenues that have gone to the 12 corporations inside of Alaska, and those numbers are available. They're reported in their annual audited financial statements. Between the period of inception of the corporations until, let's say, 1991. Then you would take that number and you would calculate what the 13th's pro rata share of those funds would have been if the 13th had been able to participate in 7i. And then using that number, talk to Congress about an appropriation, which is very unrealistic these days back there. Equivalent to that amount of money. Possibly even earmarking all or a part of those funds so that you'd have to use it to buy land. Now that's where I've kind of come in getting land, because as I said before, I don't think that Congress is going to authorize an amendment that will give the 13th land, because it absolutely makes a nightmare mess out of the 7i formula and the situation that exists inside of Alaska now, and I think it just isn't going to work. Personal opinion. That's not to say we haven't given up on it. We're doing our best, but that's my thought on the land and the how to get to the land. Yeah. Give us the money, we'll buy the land. Give us the money we should have had as a sharing in the 7i, but didn't get. Make us first class citizens, and we'll buy some nice land. Another variation on that theme, I suppose, would be an amendment that would allow us to choose land outside of Alaska, not participate in 7i, but other federal lands. The state of Oregon is 51% of the state of Oregon is federally owned land. It's somewhat similar to that here in the state of Washington, just for an example. So there's lots of federal land around. That's one thought on that. Now, on the 1991 and what to do with those shares.
I'll certainly come to you whenever you wish, Mr. Dalton. Well, we've got him here. We'll
take advantage of it. On the 1991, that's another tough
one. I spent quite a bit of time in Alaska as a guide, kind of out camping in tents and whatnot, and have a vague appreciation for what it is that the natives feel towards the land and the resources on that land. I did spend a little bit of time traveling around in Alaska interviewing some of the village corporations, in particular just talking with the people who are in charge of running these village corporations. Talked with 17 of them in different areas of the state, and my general conclusion from talking with these people is that it wasn't appropriate at all to have village corporations set up as profit entities or have land be a corporate asset within these village corporations. As pointed out by Mr. Engelstad and others, a corporation to run requires a cash flow. This is something which on the village level is fairly difficult. Annual expenses include things like audits and legal fees and salaries. A majority of the people who I interviewed with in the villages were experienced white businessmen who had been brought in, and so therefore they were receiving a fair amount of the money that the corporation actually had, and they were also interested in continuing to recognize a profit on the bottom line, which is, as their culture dictates it, a necessary part of running a corporation. The only way that these village corporations have to generate this profit on the bottom line is to convert their assets to cash, their main asset being the land. The actual money flowing to these village corporations, especially the smaller, more remote ones, is very minimal. And so the only other asset available is the surface aspects of the land, which is, as has been pointed out, very important to the culture. And in my experience, there are a number of village corporations that have been pushed to the limit and been forced to look to selling part of their land to generate enough cash so that the bottom line would show a profit. This indicates that it's fairly inappropriate for the villages to be set up this way, as it is the land which is so important to the natives. A couple of the villages which have been forced to sell land, the Eyak Corporation has sold some land within the Prince William Sound area to Anchorage residents just to generate enough profits to keep itself running as a village corporation.
What's the name of that one?
That's the Eyak.
E-Y-A-K?
E-Y-A-K, yep. Right. There are some other examples of villages, although most expressed the desire not to have to sell the land, they also expressed the fact that they had to remain profitable to maintain themselves as a corporation, and that if worse came to worse, they would be forced to sell some land to generate some profits. Therefore, it's fairly obviously that the, and because the land is so important to this culture, because the business skills aren't really available within most of the rural villages and village corporations, it's just inappropriate for the corporations to be set up as profit corporations, and therefore they should be reorganized into some form that reemphasizes the priority of preserving the land instead of maintaining a bottom line profit on an annual basis. And somehow these corporations need to be reorganized into either a nonprofit or the land needs to be transferred back to an IRA type of government. This is just my general conclusion, having talked to 17 village corporations and my personal opinion on the situation in Alaska now.
Just before you go, Mr. Pierce, you said you've talked to 17 village corporations, and that's in connection with what?
I'm a graduate student at the University of Washington, and I'm writing a master's thesis on why it is inappropriate for ANCSA, or for village corporations, to be set up in rural Alaska, because it's not jiving with the culture.
Were the 17 corporations that you've questioned chosen at random, or are they designed to be a cross-section of all the regions, or?
No, I would say that most of them were chosen because of my financial constraints on ability to travel around. Most of them were accessible by road, therefore they were not even the most rural of the yeah. village corporations. A lot of them were within the interior, and they had an office in Fairbanks where you could go talk to somebody. I talked to a couple of them out in Bristol Bay, the Aleknagik Village Corporation and the Chogyung, and then quite a few that have offices in Anchorage and then in the southeastern area also.
Right.
So most of it was where I could get without spending all my money.
Yeah. Fine, thanks. I appreciate that.
Sure.
We're going to reconvene again at 7:30, and we've had 30 people speak so far today, and I want to...
I was asked by a couple of board members to come to work for the corporation. I told them that after I graduate and complete my education, I would be their boss. And I would also like to place a congratulations to that young lady that was up here earlier for continuing her education. We do need our people to be educated. I did not know nothing about large corporations. These large conglomerate corporations, or the dealings of what a corporation had to do. And I believe right now, to this day, there are no one in this room that knows how a large corporation is supposed to be run. I know I don't. Although I'd like to learn,
for all the money that we've been losing. And I can say right now, I do not like our corporation as it stands. I do not like the people that are running it, and I would like to see a change. I have never voted for anyone on the board and had worked to see that some independent that I felt was going to be helpful to our people. We are losing a lot, but as it stands now, we have a chance to gain from from our experience of what we have lost. There was a mention on how much our board members are making, the president of our corporation, and all the high officials for our corporation. I do not know the qualifications of these people have, what their qualifications are. I know one thing, I do not believe that they qualified to get that high of a salary. For all the other corporations in the lower 48, which are larger than our corporation, they have to earn or work their way up on a corporate ladder to get the salaries that they're making now. There's hundreds of thousands of dollars that your leaders are making, which is going up into the millions. It would be nice if I could make $40,000 a year right now. Right now, I'm working for a measly $13,000 a year, which seems like a big amount of money. But it's not even enough to pay for my children's daycare. When the Congress of the United States passed a bill for the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act to go as corporations, we were forced to take this step into corporation. And when they did pass that bill, they divided the leadership of our people by not having the Alaska Native Brotherhood run your corporation. The leaders at that time were the ones that got the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. And because of dividing our leaders at the time, we lost a lot. Your leaders in the corporation right now keep telling you that they made $1 million or they made $4 million. That does not even pay for the interest that we have to pay from the bank loans that we have been getting, which we did not even know about. There is so much on the corporation that we can be dissatisfied with. Right now, we have a chance to say something about it. A lot of my grandfathers and my grandmothers and aunts and uncles are gone now, did not have a chance to benefit from a corporation, our corporation, and the monies that was brought to us by the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. I may not benefit from it. By the year 1991, there's a lot talked about it. But I feel that if we can build up our corporation by elected the right people to run our corporation and start making money for us, we will not have to worry about selling our stocks. I have been working all my life since I got out of high school. And did not have to depend on welfare or the BIA when I graduated from high school. I graduated from Sheldon Jackson Junior College back in 1959. And I have been working for myself since then. When I decided to go back to university and get a better education, I thought my corporation was going to help me. But it turned out it was not so. So I had to turn to the welfare so I can have my daycare paid for my children while I'm going to school. I was fortunate that in later years that I found out about the work study, so I was able to continue on with my education. It was a tough struggle. I stood in line in the food banks many days just so I can continue my education. And now I hope to continue on to law school. And hopefully that Sea Alaska and all the other corporations, as this young lady said, is helping their children or the younger generation to continue.
Down here to get our votes, but yet they don't give us the same courtesy or the benefits that is given to those who live in Alaska.
And land, when you talk about land, it sounds good, but it's all owned by the bank through loans. By the time the bank eats us up in 1991, people, we don't have nothing left. So why should we worry about 1991 unless we look at those people that's handling us now? The government wants us to look at long-range goals. They get us money. They set us up. Now let them intervene so that we'll have something left in 1991.
I think that The point that is made is a good one, in that the land I think Mrs. DeMott said earlier, what about a land bank? And that ties in with what the last speaker, Ms. Berquit, said. One of the proposals that has been made is for a land bank. That is, the corporation would be allowed to deposit its land in a land bank, and then while the land is in the land bank, it can't be seized for bad debts or for taxes, and thus people would keep their land. One of the problems with that is that the land goes into the land bank, but it can be withdrawn. So if your corporation were to go into bankruptcy, and I appreciate the point that the last speaker was making, that, you know, maybe there won't be anything left in 1991. I haven't overlooked that. And that's a point I've made yesterday when I spoke to the folks that were here. That is, that you can lose your land if your corporation goes bankrupt. And even if you put the land in the land bank, it's in the land bank, but when your corporation goes bankrupt, the trustee in bankruptcy may decide not to renew the deposit of land in the land bank, or he may even be in a position to withdraw it. And that's one of the problems about the land bank. It really isn't proof against corporate bankruptcy. The other thing about the land bank is that the it's supposed to be a way of achieving immunity from taxation for the land. But of course, if the land is withdrawn, or if the renewal, if there is no renewal of the land in the land bank, it would still be liable when it comes out for payment of back taxes. I only mention that because Mrs. DeMott did mention the land bank, and there are some real problems with the land bank that I'm afraid make it not a foolproof device by any means. Yeah.
I realize, yes, I did mention the land bank, and it's very new at this time. But the reason I had mentioned that, there might be a solution that you're mentioning, okay, back taxes, maybe corporations going bankrupt. Is there a possibility that land be put away for our people, that where they won't touch it, where it won't be touched for taxes or for bad debts or whatever the corporation has concurred in the, In the meantime, what is the solution? This is what I'm asking.
Well,
we've
looked at a number of solutions. That's a good question. And what I'm really, I suppose the real problem is this. Sorry, I'll do my best to make sure you can hear me.
Okay, I'll try to hear
you. Okay, yes, you're right in front of the... okay, look, if the land is a corporate asset, and that's what it is now, it's a corporate asset, then it is in jeopardy if the corporation goes broke, or if the corporation is taken over, or if the corporation can't pay its taxes. Now, the land bank is a way of trying to cope with those problems. But even when the land is in the land bank, it is still a corporate asset. And if it is withdrawn from the land bank, or if the renewal of the deposit, if there is no renewal of the deposit of land in the land bank, then it can still be taken to pay debts or to pay taxes or whatever. And my point is that when the land goes into the land bank, it's still a corporate asset. And it is the fact that it is a corporate asset that really makes it vulnerable. Now, we looked at three ideas for preserving the land, and they entail removing the land from the corporations and putting it somewhere else, separating the land from the corporations, separating the land from the shares. That's what people have been talking about. Now, Mr. Paul, who spoke yesterday, discussed the idea of an IRA government holding the land. The other possibilities are a cooperative.
Although the Central Council has been organized by the Congress, but whether it's a village IRA or a region IRA, and incidentally I'm in favor of organizing region-wide IRAs simply because of the strength of both assets and personnel. But whether it's village or region, again, the corporation, the native corporations, are bound by the Due Process Clause, and the corporations cannot give as a gift its property to anybody. It has to be somewhat related to fair value. But it can be leased by the IRA at somewhat fair value, so that the management of the land, or in the case of regions, regional corporations, the management of the subsurface rights can be in the sister organization. The native corporations would receive a rental by the region or village, so that you would get by the due process clause, but the management of the corporate asset, formerly corporate asset, would be in the village or region IRA. Therefore, the attractiveness of corporate raids would be lessened, because who wants to buy the right to receive rental? The only thing that, or the major asset that the native corporations would retain. what the corporate raiders would want would be the management of the oil, for example, on, in subsurface rights, or the management of the timber for surface rights. They would not want to receive just like an investment in a bank and receive interest.
Ocean Beauty.
Yeah. They would want to control Ocean Beauty. But supposing Ocean Beauty, the canneries that Ocean Beauty has, were in the management of the Central Council. See?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yes. You mean that other corporations use corporate money to finance their political gains? Are they embezzled money without being prosecuted? They can do that? Or they don't have to let the stockholders know or get financial statements or things like that? They don't have to do that? Other corporations don't? You mean to tell me that Chrysler Corporation, he can take money from their corporation and use it for his political gains? I don't think so. Well, all I want to know is why these people that are robbing us aren't getting prosecuted. I know people that have embezzled money and they just, you know, and it goes up into the thousands. And why we can't get financial statements. And nobody's going to tell me that my land has to go into a national park or whatever, because it don't work like that. I just want to know is why the law is not protecting us. That's all I want to know.
The very nature of a corporation is that the business of the corporation is run by directors. General Motors or Pacific Tel and Tel, when it wants to sell a building, does not go to the shareholders to get permission to sell the building.
If they embezzle money or some of that sort, they will be prosecuted, right? But if you own a stock, you get to know what that stock's worth. Well, I know it's not worth nothing now, like till after, like 1991, but financial statements. You cannot get that information?
Well, I mentioned at some length a while ago that the Alaska Native Corporations are exempted from the rules of the Securities and Exchange Commission, and I discussed that at length. I think you had stepped out of the room, but maybe Mr. Paul could... let me also add this, that if someone has embezzled something, that's a crime. And the law enforcement authorities in Juneau, that's their responsibility, the law enforcement authorities in Washington, if it comes within federal jurisdiction. And if you have evidence of that, you should go to the law enforcement authorities.
Oh, you know, I mean...
Well, I...
If they won't even let us know how much money we have in our corporation or whatever, you know, to me it's... they're breaking laws.
Well, do you have any comment on all this, Mr. Paul?
Well, it's true that the 1976 Act exempted the Native corporations from the SEC's laws. But the state of Alaska has a portion of the federal laws adopted as a state law, the Securities and Exchange Act of 1934. And that act, the 1934 Act, gives shareholders immense power in the sense that management or a dealer or a broker, somebody connected with a stock transaction, you have to tell the truth. And if you don't tell the truth, then you're violating the 1934 Act, and the officer directly can be sued. For example, lately there was a big to-do over at Kodiak. Kodiak had a merger going on with the village corporations. Some of these shareholders in the village corporation sued to set aside the merger. And because the federal act was exempted, they used the state act, the state equivalent of the Securities and Exchange Commission, and prevailed. There is a tool available, but it takes somebody with a lot of do-re-mi to invoke that law, hire lawyers, and it's very, very expensive, two Seattle law firms in defending that case, each charged more than $1 million.
And I believe we better do something about it before 1991. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Austin.
You know, before I came here, everything was beautiful. There was all love, no hatred, vast emptiness. Then I was born. You see, we in Alaska, us natives, we should have the right to live out our culture. Something that cannot die. To match this, to take away our culture would be to take away our lives. Everything we knew, everything our parents knew, everything our children should know. The same would be, you see, as far as I can see, the white people have no culture. Their only culture, as far as I see it, is progression and death. To rise, to be to the top, to get to the top, get to their downfall, and it's over. That's all the culture I see. And you see, what they fight for is to stay away, to keep, you got Democrats, Republicans, so what? I mean, what they do not want is communism, okay? If this place turned communist, their so-called culture of rise and progression would be at a fail, and they would be nothing and slowly die off. Same as is with us. If in 1991 we cannot get our land, and we cannot live the culture as we have always known it, we will have no life, the same as that of the U.S. And if that does so happen, I would probably turn and pray for communism, because if communism did come into the United States, then we would be able to have our land. Maybe whoever runs the U.S., maybe we'll have to work for that person. But he could care less if we were on our own land, as long as maybe we gave it to him, or if we worked, maybe we would not be able to rise higher than we are. But so what? Our culture, we never cared if we rose higher than anybody else. We lived at peace with the land, with our environment. That's as high as we had to go. I do dearly think we cannot have our culture removed. It is all of us. If we could not have our land, if we could not fish, if that is all taken away from us, I would truly turn communist. Because at least then we would have that what we wanted. If we had to work for someone else, so what? We would have our land, and we would be ourselves. That which we make would be for ourselves. You cannot depart us from what is ours. We will always be. Thank you.
Oh, could we have your name?
Franklin James, Jr.
Thank you, Mr. James. One of the things that we've been looking into is the way in which Native people have fared in other countries, including the communist countries. And in the Soviet Union, as far as we can tell, Native people are no better off than they are in the United States or Canada. And because the Soviets are very secretive about what is happening there, it is difficult to get.
So we had to move. I can remember that when I was a little kid, we moved to a town of Klawock to a house that wasn't insulated. As a result, two of my brothers died of pneumonia. We couldn't keep the house warm. And so the land we moved from used to belong to my father, belonged to my great-great-grandfather, and his father we passed it down from generation to generation. To date, we still have cabins there. We utilize the land every year. We put up our Indian food there. We had people that were born there. We have relatives that are buried there. Yet we filed for land when the appropriate time was supposed to file for re-ownership. And so far, we haven't received anything. The federal government claims that they have no record of us even filing to date. And I was wondering, to your knowledge, do we still have a chance to retain that land? We still use it, we still live it, we still consider it ours, and we're still filing. We file every year. Every year they come out with some new deal, we still file every year.
Yeah. I'm not in a position to give you any kind of detailed legal advice, but let me ask you a few questions about your situation. Is it your understanding that you yourself or somebody else in your family filed an allotment application back before 1971?
Yes, we filed before that too.
Okay. And you're saying that the Bureau of Indian Affairs and the Bureau of Land Management have no record of that application?
Yeah, we got the receipts of filing and sending certified letters. We have the receipts for that.
Do you know whether the application is in fact filed in the Bureau of Land Management today?
Yes, it's supposed to be filed there in the Bureau of Land Management. They're supposed to have records of it in Juneau and also in Anchorage, but the people up there claim they haven't received nothing. We probably were better qualified than the Shield suit because I know them personally, and I can't say what they're doing is wrong, but I think we had to have precedence over them because we live and we have people buried on the land.
So. Well, it's not really a question of having precedence over other applicants. It's a question of your relationship with the United States government that's at issue. And were you the applicant or was one of your family members?
We're all applicants. There's about 300 of us in our family, and we're all applicants. Yeah.
So you yourself have an application on
file? Yes, I do.
Well, what I would suggest you do is check with either the Bureau of Indian Affairs in Juneau or Alaska Legal Services Corporation in Juneau or Ketchikan, depending on which place is closer to your land, and find out what has become of your claim. The Shields case, which I just mentioned, may have eliminated your claim unless one of the applicants in your family used the land before the forest was withdrawn. If you have a very old family member who applied for an allotment on land that was used before the forest was established there, then maybe that claim is still alive. If everybody who applied for an allotment began his or her use after the forest was established, then you may be covered by the Shields case, and your claim may have been eliminated through that litigation. I would suggest very strongly that you check either with BIA or with Alaska Legal Services in Ketchikan or Juneau.
Yeah, because what I'm trying to establish that my forefather has been on that land before even the word Russian was heard in Alaska.
Yeah.
We were there first.
That's what's tragic about these situations. Do you know whether the land is part of a village corporation selection?
No, it's not.
Okay.
It's not.
But it's in the Tongass Forest.
Yes, it is.
Well, Mr. O'Leary's recommendation is designed to deal with that type of case, as I understand it.
That's correct.
Thank you. I'd like to have a word with you before you leave.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, thanks very much, Mr. O'Leary. I think everybody appreciates your advice. Could you leave that with us by any chance?
Well, these are illegible notes. I'd be happy to supply typewritten testimony at a later time.
Well, if you'd just like to, I'm just thinking of the typist who does this, and we just hand it on to her.
Yeah, very few sections of the testimony I gave were verbatim from these pages, although I was looking at them at the time.
Okay, well, thanks very much.
Okay, thank you.
education. I got married instead, and I have 5 children. And when we had to decide whether we should go to 13th Region or stay in Sea Alaska and stay at large, my children, I was custodian for them. That was the hardest decision I ever had to make in my life. I had to decide, do I dare make this? Because what happens when they get older? They don't have the they didn't have the option to decide if they should stay or not. It was mine. And today, all they say is, well, big deal. They didn't want us in it anyway. The Alaskans, they act like we don't even belong there. And yet we were born up there. I was born in Alaska. My parents lived up there forever. And if you deny that, you might as well forgive up. Just give up everything. I believe in the land, not because of what it can get me, but because eventually I will go up there. The only reason I have land in Alaska is because I inherited it from my parents. I also inherited land and some Sea Alaska shares. I am in a unique position like Billy Johnson. I belong to 13th Region and I belong to Sea Alaska. And it just, I would have preferred to stay in Sea Alaska. And because I was at large and I was not in Alaska, and the people up there, they were very much against us then. They didn't want to include us because it would have diluted their earnings. And right now, they're doing the same thing to the people in 1971. If you were born after 1971, suddenly you're non-existent. You're a non-entity. You are 1971. Think about your kids. Truly and honestly, are we all being mercenary? And how many of them are really and truly proud of being a Native American? These people who helped us in Sea Alaska and 13th Region and the people who worked hard were our parents. They worked very hard to get this land claims thing off the ground. And here we are bickering about it. It really just upsets me when people do that. No one knew what to expect. Had we known, we'd be billionaires by now. We wouldn't be quibbling over 100 shares. They would be able to quote us a price. Right now, you ask somebody how much your share is worth. They'll say, I don't know. We won't know till 1991. Thank you for listening to me.
Thank you, ma'am. Thank you very much.
Mr. Commissioner, ladies and gentlemen, my name is Alan Heitman, and I'm from Kodiak, belong to the Kodiak region, and reside down here in Seattle. I don't think we have but 3 Kodiak stockholders here amongst us. And my big concern, which you brought up, Mr. Commissioner, is the FCC. My feeling is that the government should put us back where we will be covered by the FCC to be under their umbrella and keep us away from a lot of these lawsuits that are coming about. I've been in these lawsuits. I know what it's like. I have a stack of papers at home that I don't even hardly understand. And they continue coming in. And another thing I'd like to point to you is what we call our afterbirths. The young ones that are coming along after 1971, what are we going to do for them? Which is a broad question. And I think each and every one of us, the elders and the young ones, should get together and talk this out. And another thing that concerns me is the opt-in, opt-out election. I've heard a number of at-large people here right today. As you know, we had a choice to vote into our Alaska region or stay within 13. I voted out, but I quote, we did not get a chance to vote into any villages. That's all I have for now. Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, Mayor, very much.
Good afternoon. My name is Clarissa Evans. I am a Sea Alaska member. I'm also a Tribal Corporation member. I haven't been down here in the United States for I've been here for 3 years. But there's a lot of things that have been covered since I've been sitting here that is very interesting. And there are a lot of things that I have questions about. I've lived in Alaska. I have been living close to where my tribal corporation was.
Where is that?
Cake Tribal. And if this Sea Alaska land claims was for the people, as like they're saying right now, United States, so Reagan is for us. But that's the same way I feel about the corporations. You know, I don't feel that they are doing anything for the people as much as they claim to. I have not seen as much profit. The things that I have gotten out of the corporation, I have nothing to show for. And like that one, Antoinette, whatever her name is, I see where our families, parents, grandparents before, what their idea of benefits for us.